I want Mike to comment about the issue of morbidity in this situation, but before he does, Lenny, can you describe a typical patient who you would use post-op radiation therapy and a typical patient who you would not?
What we have come to do is we rely heavily on the Catan nomograms, and we'll run a nomogram on a patient, and our general approach is that they have less than a 25% recurrence after radical prostatectomy based on their post-operative features. We mention it to them, but we don't usually recommend it. The patients above 50% at the present time at our center, we strongly recommend that they consider adjuvant radiation therapy within 3 to 6 months of the radical prostatectomy. And those who hit somewhere in between, we offer it as an option and kind of let the patient decide. I mean, ultimately, the patient decides across the board, but we really strongly encourage the greater than 50% recurrence rates to think about radiation.
Can you comment, Mike, on the issue of morbidity?
Certainly in the shorter term or even in the mid-range post-treatment, we see exacerbation of stress incontinence, and there are increased number of bladder neck strictures down the road, and there's an increased risk for proctitis, although the risks of serious injuries, you know, with proper techniques remain low. But I think it's important or incumbent upon anybody discussing post-op radiation or a salvage radiotherapy with the patient to indicate that the morbidity will be increased above and beyond radical prostatectomy. We are increasing potential complications, albeit small. As far as the issue that Len brought up regarding the dose, right now, retrospective series, the one from Valicenti, suggests that higher radiation doses are needed. I don't think we have any prospective trials that have really clarified that, but currently the standard doses in the community about 65 to 70 gray. Now, whether higher doses would actually be better, that's unclear, but certainly that would increase morbidity. I think we're not seeing long-term morbidity because of those studies. They've used lower radiation doses, and basically you're not harming them.
Tom?
I get back to Steve's point. If you wait until the PSA starts to rise, are you going to do the patient a disservice? Is the disease going to have any poorer outcome? To my knowledge, has there ever been a head-to-head comparison of immediate versus delayed radiation therapy? And just waiting until that PSA gets to a point, I mean, we know the lower the PSA, the better you do. But it started out at 2, then it went to 1.5, now it's gone to below 1. And, you know, we can all see the trend coming up. The difficulty is the ASTRO criteria for radiation failure. If you're going to believe them, you may miss a significant window where you can be affecting these differences. But I've never seen a head-to-head comparison, to my knowledge, prospective, where they looked at adjuvant versus salvage. And by using salvage, you can save a lot of patients some of these problems, which Mike very clearly points out. They're going higher and higher in the doses. I mean, now you're going to 70 gray. Well, that's the old treatment for full-blown radiation with your prostate still in place. What's going to happen there?
Tom, I think you have to think about the patient's standpoint. And Dave Crawford has studied this before. A rising PSA in a patient who's been treated for definitive local therapy is devastating on their overall quality of life.
It's only going to 0.2. In fact, most of the people now who will turn around and say, I hate supersensitive assays. I'm certainly becoming disenchanted with them because I spend quite a lot of time on the phone where I'm looking at 0.01, 0.03, back to 0.01, up to 0.05. I don't know what to make of them. So if you use 0.2 as your sign of failure and you're considering giving radiation therapy, post-surgery, if you're at 0.2, you probably need something done if you're a person who believes in doing something. So I don't think that argument plays into it at all.